Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, which shares a look at universal energy, healing, and our multidimensional uniqueness as spiritual beings having a physical life. Today I welcome Megan Carnarius, author of A Deeper Perspective on Alzheimer's and Other Dementias, as she shares her vast experience as a licensed caregiver for those with Alzheimer's and who has discovered her patients as essentially timeless beings who can be given a positive, loving, and compassionate supportive environment for their well-being and for their own healing process. As Megan wrote, a person with dementia has a whole and well spirit, and in the broadest sense, their brain is but a vehicle of self-expression. It does not define their essence. Megan's book wisely shares a multidimensional view of healing, mind, body, and spirit, and for all diseases, trauma, and challenging life events, and offers valuable ways to view illness as the means for ultimately creating health and a more treasured life experience. Hello, Megan.
Hello. Thank you for having me here today.
And thank you for joining us today. You know, Megan, as listeners of Healing From Within are aware, my guest and I on the show search our own personal experiences to discover a greater awareness of self, human conditions, human nature, and ways to create a more prosperous, healthy, and loving life experience. But this can only come through self-investigation and the mastering of our emotions, which can offer a greater illumination of our belief systems so we can discover the truth of our multidimensional being or state of being. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Megan will share that there is a need to revise our current methods for taking care of people with Alzheimer's and other dementias, and indeed I'm going to say taking care of people with any health issue, and to see that what may appear to be hopeless can actually provide opportunities for insight, inspiration, and a greater view of ourselves as expanding and evolving human beings. Megan will share how to create a supportive environment around the various stages of the disease, a clearer definition of the various forms of dementia, and what to expect from the patient as the disease progresses. Megan is a registered nurse, licensed nursing home administrator, and massage therapist who has experience in designing and running memory care settings. Megan, you know, I often begin each show by asking my guests to think back to their childhood, to either remember an event or a person or an interest that may have shown them, even at that early time, or shown other people, the work or values or lifestyle that is important to them now. So think back for a minute.
I think one of the more defining things for me growing up was that I had a younger sister who had some developmental challenges. And my mother and father had a family meeting with us when I was 7, and they said, and you quoted in your introduction for me, they said, your sister has a whole spirit. She's having a handicapping experience, and it's our job to really help her shine through as much as possible. And that we all made an agreement before we came in to be together in this way and to be the mother and the father, the sisters, and how can we, from this role, really bring the best and sort of roll our sleeves in and up and dive in, and that the true tragedy would be missing the boat on that we had all agreed to this and wanted to learn from it versus that it was hard for her to have this experience. There was an emphasis on what are we all learning from this, what are we all benefiting from this, and why are we together doing this, and how can we do a good job of it. And so it created this sense of equality and peership for me with her, and that I should do my best.
I also think your parents had a handle on the fact that we're not just living a physical life. It is not just our mind that is directing our destiny or our life plan or how we should learn from our experiences. They were letting you know that you and everybody else has a soul. And
Right.
when we merge the energy of our soul being or life plan, what we came here to do for ourselves and in regard to others and with others, that you can truly live a very valued life. When you just think in terms from the head, from the mind, or the physical way of life, a great deal seems to be lost. So you had parents who understood that, and that's possibly why your sister chose your family, because she would have the best journey and be able to teach you all
Right.
to develop yourselves with great love and compassion, which is what I think a physical life is about. We're just here to be gatherers of experiences without judgment and to know our eternal nature or soul energy or the fact that something more survives than our time
Right.
here. It's a great gift that you knew that. I didn't as a child. I grow up with parents who express that. And just today I said to a mother, her son came over to me and said, my grandfather died. He was 4 years old. My poppy died and he's in heaven. What do you think about that? And I said, I think any time you think of your grandfather and mention his name, he's around you because we all have this soul. And whether we're here in the body or we're not. And the mother came over to me and thanked me. And
Aww.
thanked me for saying such a grown-up thing to such a little boy. I thought that might show that parents out there should respect that soul presence in their children and let them know what life is really about. You know, many people are interested in religion, but they don't really let their children know that they came with many, many choices and many destiny opportunities, and we have to help them do that. So let's go on to what made you decide to write this book?
I was giving a lot of talks, and I had family members repeatedly come up and say, "You really need to write a book
Well,
about this." Excuse me. So that was part of it, and it took me a long time to write it because I, creating that kind of space when you're actively in work,
yes.
Is hard, and I would take a year not work on it, then work 10 days straight on it on a vacation or something, and so it just took time. But I'm glad, there's always timing for everything, and what I knew 15 years ago as opposed to what I know today, we're always learning and growing, and so it felt like when the book finally came together and came out, and that FinTorn picked it up, it was really at the point it needed to be. So that felt really freeing.
I think sometimes it does take a long time to do anything worthwhile. It took me 8 years to write my second book, The Living Spirit. There were many interruptions, but you know what? Every time is the right time. Wherever we are in our life, it is not the wrong time, but the right time to experience something and to bring together, as you said, all the knowledge that you were gathering along the way. But I especially liked that you said there are many pros and cons to ageism, stereotyping and the question of how old is old. And we have an aging population, and we also have a big increase in Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. So it's very important. Your book is very important for caretakers, and it's very important for people in the medical field. It's very deeply detailed, and I did love your spiritual insights because I feel healing, if you are not taking into effect that soul essence of a person, is just dealing with symptoms, the Western medicine way of dealing, but it's not the whole package, mind, body, and spirit. And your book addresses that. But tell us some examples of how people deal poorly when someone has dementia or Alzheimer's. What might they do in front of them that could be very disturbing to the patient?
Yeah, I part of the the way we talk to one another. There's a lot of assumptions, and there's sometimes a miss, like a way of always having been together and then kind of expecting it to continue being the same. And so an example is, I always tell people, please don't use the phrase, "Don't you remember?" Because that's like telling someone in a wheelchair at the bottom of a mountain, "Would you please go up?"
Yes.
You know, this person has memory loss, and because we can't see it, and people have good and bad days, and in the earlier part of the disease, they're also trying really hard to conceal, to compensate, to try to manage. And so to have people sort of expecting them to remember things, and it's their short-term memory that gets affected first, it's the most impaired. And so someone is very active. They're with you. They're participating in the experience, but there's nothing to help them transform that moment to long-term memory storage. And so I just see sometimes families talking about the person in front of the person in a really negative way, which I, you know, as if the person
isn't
the there.
Yeah, the person is there. Of course they hear. If they don't hear on the physical level, their soul hears it. And,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's painful. And when people are like, "I just told you, you know, I just told you, blah, blah, blah. Don't you remember, blah, blah, blah?" And it's like, no, that's the impairment this person has. And so shifting language into, "Oh, I remember when,"
yes,
and you can do reminiscing, and then the person can catch up with you often and enjoy what you're saying. So encouraging people to do that. I think another thing that folks do sometimes is, and this is to what you're speaking of earlier, we are more than what's right here in front of us. And so to say someone is dead already, or, you know, this phrase, the constant funeral. When I first started working with Alzheimer's, they said the victim with Alzheimer's all the time. And then it shifted to the person with Alzheimer's, which was a much more empowering step. And when I work with people, I still feel like people dismiss someone with dementia, and it's like this person is still connected to this life for some very valid reason, for that soul, for that person's life trajectory, and they're still participating, and they're participating in a slightly different way. And so what are the ways that we can still connect to that? What are the ways that we can get rid of judgment around it? And how can we find the avenues which are still open? What are the conduits that are still working? And most of the time, people can be very emotionally connected to what's happening. And so they feel people's dissatisfaction or frustration or irritation, and they also feel people's love and joy and pleasure. And so helping people focus on, you know, what is your body language, what's your tone? 7% of our communication is actually spoken word. 38% is tone. And the rest of it, which is a huge amount, 54, I think, is gesture.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we help people realize words are great, but there's a lot more to the way we communicate to one another. And someone with dementia, for very far into the disease, we can still find ways to connect to that person. And
absolutely. And you also said staff or family helping too much and not allowing the person to contribute to whatever activity or whatever communication in any way is important. So we don't want to take away anything from them. We want to really respect and honor and love them as the people they are. And I'm going to tell you a little story. A long time ago, I do Reiki energy healing, and I had a young girl come to me. Her mother, who was a nurse, sent her to me because she was going away to college, and she was a little anxious about that. So she came to me, and when I was doing Reiki on her, I heard a song, and I said to her, "This is a song, lovely song. What does it mean to you?" And she said to me, "My grandmother has Alzheimer's, and she doesn't recognize us any longer, and my mother is so sad about that." I said, "Well, your grandmother is sending that song through me, through her soul memory, and she's still the same person that she was that you love and remember, and treat her as such, and tell your mother this story." And the girl started to cry, and that's what it meant to me.
Mm-hmm.
That we are the sum total of all our experiences, of both if you want to see it as good or bad. I don't really see it as good or bad. I just see it as experiences. And it's all okay. And we have to get past being so saddened by the changes in people. We're always changing, moment by moment, right? Day by
Right.
day, place by place, moment by moment. And that is a good thing, because it's giving us new perspectives on life and who we are. So I think it's important people treat anyone with any disease, anywhere, or any situation with the utmost of respect and honor their spirit. Now we can go on to something I like very much, your family doctor, Dr. Henry Williams.
Williams,
oh,
yeah.
good. I just loved reading about him, because I had such a doctor also in my life. And she was an internist and Reiki master and yoga master. And she had the whole package, you know. She understood what it meant to be humane, to be a human being, humane, and to be a healer on all levels. So what did he help you understand about disease?
Well, I mean, even when I was a child, he would always ask when he was addressing something that, you know, I had a cold or flu or something was going on. He would always say, why do you need this? What is happening that, what's the reason you have this? What's going on for you that you have this illness? And so even though I was really young and I didn't really know how to answer him, I would always think about it. And over the years, I began being able to tell what it was, and why was my soul needing to retreat with a cold, or why was, you know, and I think all of us have a certain degree of awareness about the things that stress us and really get at us physically.
Yeah,
versus,
maybe lower our immune system because
yeah.
we're anxious or worried about something. So he was showing you not only the allopathic approach to modern medicine with antibiotics, but a homeopathic herbal approach. He was like a shaman, a healer. He was aware that some illness is related to spiritual distress, and some is
right.
to relational distress. And I think that's great. You also talk about Louis Pasteur and Claude Bernard, who were two scientists who had an ongoing argument about the nature of germs or illness. And this goes
Right.
along with what we're talking about. I kind of liked being reminded of that. So tell us
Right.
something about Pasteur. He just believed germs were the cause.
Germs
Just
were out
germs,
there,
germs,
and they were going to get you. And it had nothing to do with the host.
Yeah,
And,
but you know what? Germs are always out there. But
right.
some
And
people
so
get
what is
sick
it
and
about?
some people don't. So tell us what Bernard thought.
And he thought it was the soil the germ landed on, so that would be the person, what's going on in the person,
yes,
that then causes that to take hold. And so the myth is that on Pasteur's deathbed, he called out, it's the soil, and then he died.
I
so
can't,
that he was.
I want to tell you that since I have read that, it keeps coming back to me in many different ways. The soil, the inner being, who we are at any given time, and how we allow things to be imprinted or impressed upon us at the cellular level, at the soul level, and how we will respond. We'll either respond and be very inspired with joy and happiness, or we'll respond and we may get sick. So,
right.
Yes, I thank you very much for that, because it's a very good vision to have when you want to think about what's really going on in a person's life. And most of us want to help the people we love. And sometimes the only way we can help them is to allow them to go through what they have to go through so that they
right.
can make these discoveries. And I know we don't like it all the time, but
no, and I think there's a place, I mean, I always want to say, you know, this is a really challenging illness, and it's really challenging for people who love that person, around that person, to try to work with. And I think grief is a real thing, and if you give yourself a chance to really go into it and then move through it, so if you have some sense of, if I'm depressed, it's going to affect me over time, it can be a motivator for caregivers to say, okay, how do I contend with this and stay well myself? What do I need to do? What do I need to address? What do I need to express that helps me navigate this really, really difficult time in my life? And then at the same time, how am I addressing my loved one and making sure they have what they need? In every way, there are two people that are contending with this, or three, or four, or five, depending on the support systems. But there's always a caregiver for this person who's also trying to cope with, wow, that's
yes.
really different.
So we want to let our listeners out there know it is just as important for the caretakers to take care of themselves and to learn from all the experiences they're sharing with their patients loosely here, with the individual they're working with. And so how is it you have been able to work for so long in this field? You know, many healthcare people do have burnout, teachers, medical people, everyone in intense situations. So what is it that helps you support yourself, take care of yourself, and to remain grounded?
I think it's that feeling all the time that this person is a whole spirit, and that when I'm working with what the disease is doing, this sense of feeling really, I want the person to have the best quality of life that they can have at every stage. I see people not go the whole process. They don't go to the very end of the disease and something happens and they depart. I see other people go the whole way. And it's not for me to judge when is it right for this person to go. It's to create the best quality of life I can to support them in their own process. There's a reason that this work is being done. And
absolutely.
So how can I frame it in a way, and it feels very objective.
Well, I know you
yeah.
wrote, you also wrote that you were taught in life, we are meant to learn, to love, to make a difference. And this has been the foundation of your perspective. And Megan, I know you were actually given all you needed to succeed, and so are all of us, and to thrive in life and beyond. In my book, The Living Spirit, Answers for Healing and Infinite Love, spirit allows us to face challenging situations that our energy, emotions, and thoughts bring into our lives and help us to see that we are on the right or wrong track. Therefore, we are co-creating our life by observing what is happening and by seeing how to make the best of any situation. Through our faith and the surrender of some of our personal needs, we allow the universe and a higher source to help us find ways to search and remember our already preconceived destiny and life plan. Spirit gives us all the time in the world, in this life and other lives and beyond, to find our greatest means for developing levels of infinite love and healing as evolving, compassionate expressions of the divine. And I think when I read some of your beautiful words in the book that expressed where you get your inner strength from and the beauty of the work you do, I kind of was saying it that way for you and for
mm-hmm.
all those who are caretakers. So we'll go on to, how does a caretaker support themselves? What should they do in order to find joy and health in their own life? What is just some practical examples of what they need to do?
It's really a great and broad question. So there are little things like, are there some mundane things that you don't actually like doing that you have family or friends asking, is there any way I can help? And you're so immersed sometimes, it's hard to back out and go, huh, I could have someone do the grocery shopping, or I could have someone stay with my loved one and I go grocery shopping because it actually gives me a little break. Like, what are the things that really on a practical level, there are people that may want to be supportive to you and you don't know what to say to them?
What you're saying is it's okay to ask for help, time yes. off, to go into nature, to enjoy yourself with other friends, to take yourself sometimes away from the immediate work, to rejuvenate and renew yourself. Yeah, ask for those around you to support you. That's probably the biggest thing, I would think. So what would you want people to take away with them after reading your book?
I hope that they have a feeling of greater compassion for themselves and for the person that they're working with and concerned about, that they have a greater sense of peace about this is part of a lifelong journey, and that instead of feeling like, oh my goodness, the person reached this sort of pinnacle and then fell off a cliff with having this disease, to make that trajectory line a long line that's on the horizon instead of this up and down kind of sense about it. And that if you think about how they were as a child, how they were as an adult, how they were in other circumstances, what are the things that, you know, you can reflect on and say, this is just a different part of this person's experience, and we did the best we could to be supportive and loving in this phase, just as their parents, hopefully when they were little, were loving and supportive when they were growing up. That it's,
I think that's beautiful. You're asking people to remember the whole person and the whole purpose of life. And the beauty of life. I think that's just beautiful. I want to thank you, Megan Carnarius, author of A Deeper Perspective on Alzheimer's, for sharing a lifetime of continuous learning about one of the most challenging health issues of our time, Alzheimer's and dementia, and sharing tools, insights, and a spiritual way to deal with the challenges of helping those who are trying to maintain a quality of life, humor, and love, no matter what. For more information and to purchase this book, go to megancarnarius.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have taken an in-depth look at an illness which quietly steals a part of the person's personality, memory, and quality of life, and have tried to show how, in a spiritual sense, it enables all parties to conquer fear, learn acceptance, and develop a quality of love and compassion, heightening our humanity and helping our souls to reach upward to ask for guidance and help that may make this a time for body and soul to work together in harmony and balance, accepting the divine aspect of a person's life and respecting the limitations of physical life. As Megan wrote, in later stages, they are no longer involved in mundane worldly existence and are in a deep internal state that we as caretakers generally cannot reach into and share. Dementia has built a world around them as if they have entered a cloister. Rather than think of this wall as an imprisonment, I view it as a final honoring of the life this individual has led and of the body or vessel that housed them. Allowed to cocoon, it affords the time needed for the soul to attend to deeper aspects of the self on a spiritual level. My last hope is that in the final stages, when ready, the individual can let go and be allowed to go when they know it's time. As in all things in life, Megan and I would have you know, we can only do our best for ourselves and others with the knowledge, tools, and assistance available to us at any given time, and try to hold on to faith, abiding love, humility, and dignity as we face the physical challenges of Alzheimer's, any form of dementia, old age, terminal illness, and any other illness, and know that as energy beings, we will only be transformed and aligned to a new form of creation and existence. I am Cheryl Glick, host of Healing From Within, author of The Living Spirit, and invite you to my website, CherylGlick.com, to learn more about the universal laws of energy, eternal life, healing, and the tools, methodology, and wisdom to sustain us throughout time and space and unfolding patterns of life and change. Shows may also be heard on webtalkradio.net and dreamvision7radio.com. Thank you.